What up, listeners? This is Eddie Griffin. And I don't know why the hell you listening to Mr. Media. Wait a minute, I know why. Because it's the only place you're going to get the real shit with no motherfucking gutter chase. Look out, y'all.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to rising comedian Daryl Lennox, who headlines the Starz comedy special, Blind Ambition. Stick around, because as my guest would say, this might work, but it probably won't. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by the Stitcher app for mobile devices. Give it a test drive today at stitcher.com/mrmedia, Mr. Media. I love this free radio app, and I think you will too. stitcher.com/mrmedia. Today's episode of Mr. Media Interviews is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You know GoDaddy.com from their wild and sexy commercials, but isn't it time you actually test drove their web hosting and domain registration services yourself? For a limited time, Mr. Media listeners can save 10% on the already low price of web hosting services at GoDaddy.com by entering the promo code POD4 at checkout. Again, that's 10% off web hosting when you go to GoDaddy.com and enter the promo code POD4, that's P-O-D, the number 4, at checkout. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of deaf, dumb, and blind Canadian comedy fans who hear no punchlines, speak no punchlines, and see no... You know, that doesn't make sense, does it? Oh well, it's all in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.
Oh, are you Forrest Whitaker? Can I get a picture with you, man?
He's been called one of the funniest comedians in North America.
You work in an eye doctor's office. Shouldn't you have some sensitivity training?
Might work, but probably won't. How many years of medical school is that? Everything might work, but probably won't.
Daryl Lennox, Blind Ambition.
Me trying to fix it myself might work, but probably won't. I'm like, why?
Daryl Lennox jokes about himself throughout his new Starz comedy special, Blind Ambition. But it takes a while for it to sink in on the viewer that the title of the show really does refer to him. He is blind in his left eye and has limited vision, field of vision, in his right. But so what? The man is funny. He'll make you laugh at things you didn't know were funny. And they probably wouldn't be funny coming from someone else. Lennox has such a calm demeanor that you may not feel the first punchline as it lands, but pretty soon you'll be laughing too hard to really care. And when you see his act, live or on TV, the part I suspect you'll remember most is when he offers up those things that might work, but probably won't. Daryl Lennox, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hey, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And I got to ask you, and I know you've been at it for a while. I'm fairly new to your work, but it seems to me that might work, but probably won't. That's like, that should be like you might be a redneck. I just love that. I thought that was hysterical.
Well, you know what? I had somebody tell me that it could be that my you might be a redneck thing, and I never thought of it like that because, you know, I've been a comedy snob the first few years of my life, and now I'm on the cusp of AARP age, and so I figured I might want to look into this whole branding of a phrase thing. So, but seriously, it was I was in shock when the doctor told me that. I had a surgeon tell me, you know, that the surgery in this left eye was, you know, it just probably wasn't going to work. But he actually said it might work, but probably won't. And my first thought was, well, everything might work, but probably won't. And you know what? It just kind of took its life of its own. And then I started thinking of other things that might work and probably won't. And I don't know. It's turned into something, I guess, huh?
I'm telling you. I heard that, yeah. And I kept coming back to it. And I listened to so I watched the Blind Ambition special, and mm-hmm. then I went to your YouTube channel, and I watched some there, and I kept thinking, man, this is like gold. This is your next – you should do another special or a record or something.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you should call it. And you should just pack your act with those.
Just slam them in there, huh?
That's what – I mean, you know how people –
yeah?
As I tell my 16-year-old daughter, people is dumb. No disrespect to my audience, of course, but people is dumb, you know, and they remember that one thing, and you got – I think you got gold there.
Well, people come up and ask me all the time, how do I say that again? And I tell them, and so I have been using them. Quite a bit of them in my latest hour, so I might do just that.
I want the T-shirt. On the front it says, it might work, and then you get to the other side and it says, but it probably won't.
Yeah.
I think that'd be great.
Yeah, I might do that.
So that really started with the eye surgery.
Yeah. It was ironically after I had won the Seattle Comedy Competition, I thought I'd won enough money that I could go and finally go see a doctor, and then he told me, look, you know, the surgery just not going to work for you, buddy. So, you know, it's an interesting process. The thing has been, I thought, you know, that I was always pretty good, you know, judge yourself on your peers and their work and whatnot. And then when my eyesight started to get a little worse and I had to trust somebody, that was the scariest thing ever. And then for me to be able to do that and have, you know, moderate amount of success, it made me look at my life and my act so much differently. And I thought, I really got something I got to talk about here. It's important to me.
You made it work for yourself.
And
how long ago was this? So you did have the surgery or you did not?
Yeah, I did have two surgeries. So both of them occurred in the summer of 2009.
Okay.
And then it took me until October of 2009 before I could start talking about it on stage with any kind of effectiveness.
How different is your act today than it was before 2009?
I've changed my act quite a bit over the years, but right before then, I just had hinges and little twinges of talking about, you know, that my eyes weren't very good. But then after that, it was, you know, a lot of social commentary. You know, I've always been philosophical based. And so right before all that happened, I was talking about, trying to access more love in my life as opposed to fear. You know, people make decisions based on one of those two things, love or fear. So I was trying to build an act around that, but I didn't have that root of, well, Darryl, you talk about love and talk about fear, but where's yours at until I went through the surgery? And then that took hold.
Well, I'll tell you something. I haven't discussed this on the show before, but about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I had to have I had a detached retina.
Is that right?
Eye. And yeah. I had gone to this eye doctor, and I'll be very careful what I say here because I don't want to be sued. But I had gone to him three times before he finally decided that it was a detached retina. I kept complaining that I just felt like the vision was getting narrowing and narrowing. And finally, one day I went in there and I said, look, something's not right. And he said, you need surgery tomorrow. You got a detached retina. And he sent me immediately that afternoon to the eye surgeon. I don't want to make this too much about me, but I appreciate what you've been through in a slightly different way. And the eye surgeon said, well, didn't you notice that, you know, your eyesight was getting bad? I said, yeah, three times. He says, well, anybody should have caught that. You know, it's pretty obvious now. I said, okay. So – but the fear you go through with your eyes, because it's like, you know, you can understand. You don't want to do without anything that God's given you, of course.
Right.
You don't want to have to do without a finger or a hand or an arm or a leg or foot. But, you know, you think, okay. But if my sight is limited, you start, you know, and then there was problems, there were complications with the surgery, and my God. And so when I heard your story, and I watched the special, and I realized the connection between the title and your actual life, and I thought, wow, I definitely want to talk to you just because I have a great respect for what you've gone through, having had this real scare. And it took like a year for the surgeon and changing eye doctors, I want to point out, to finally get some correction. Anyway, just for what it's worth.
Thank you. It's a very – people that haven't been through it, you don't know how to describe it because it is your eyes and there's so much – stuff and nerves and stuff in there. It's just scary. But since I've done the special, the amount of people that have been through similar eye stuff come up to me all the time. And it feels like, you know, I don't want to say I'm the voice for the visually impaired, but people have been coming up. You know, I was in Madison and a guy lost his eye at a Brewers baseball game, foul ball, and just crushed his eye. and the Brewers sent him a baseball game. Sent him a baseball. How jackass is that?
Come on.
I know. But yeah, but I've been hearing, I mean, so many different people have been, you know, relating to me about this whole thing. So it feels like I'm kind of doing something with my comedy now, which is exciting.
Well, it's good. Now, do you worry at all that, you know, people will be like, okay, you've got trouble, I've got trouble, move on? Or is it, you know, do you, what I'm wondering is, are you finding that you're connecting more with the audience because it's more personal than it was before?
Yes. Yes, I mean, we all have vulnerabilities and issues, and I think I mentioned that in my show. You know, we've all got something wrong with us. But after I established my vulnerability and how it's changed my perspective, then we get down to my universal subject and my points of view and that sort of stuff. And it's still based from my vulnerability space, but so is everybody else's, right?
I've been listening the last week or two, especially to these old stand-up sit-down specials that Sonny Fox did on XM Radio, where he's interviewed. It's always a stand-up, and sometimes it's somebody like a Bill Cosby.
Sure.
It's Ron White. Mm-hmm. You know, a wide variety of these guys, and it seemed like the thread that united all of them, despite their incredible difference, was they all found over the years that when they spoke more from who they really were, as opposed to trying to create a persona that they weren't,
right.
That was when they found that they really connected with people. That people sensed that they were really talking about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that's not quite a question, but I'm just
Listen. It's. I always thought that, you know, I could do this, but I never thought I could do it like this. You know, to talk about something that's so vulnerable for me and scary, and I felt like I had backed myself into a corner with trusting somebody like that. And, you know, I had so many friends recently had passed away that I thought, yeesh, you know, what the hell is this whole life thing about? And so it's been incredible, man. It's really incredible to, and you know what, I think I'm more excited about the accomplishment aspect of it. That I did something really cool, because I get so inspired by like great work, like to learn how to prepare that 25 minutes or so when I'm talking about the my surgery. I listened to Bill Cosby talk about being in the dentist chair. That bit's like 20 minutes long, mm-hmm. And then Richard Pryor, you know, set himself on fire and the heart attack. Those are long bits. Right. And then my father-in-law is in a orchestra, and he listens to classical music all the time. So I get ahead and said, give me your stuff that is like 20, 25 minute, you know, aria, just one song, because I wanted to learn how to create the tension and release it and build it. And classical music, especially Italian, was just, it's the best. So I learned how to do that 25 minutes based on those three things.
Well, you need to let your father-in-law see this tape so he can hear you mention him after Bill Cosby, Richard Pryor, and my father-in-law.
Well, I will.
I'm guessing coming from a guy who makes his living as a comedian, that's some pretty esteemed company to mention your father-in-law in.
Well, I meant it. It's weird where we get our inspirations is how to get better for him.
Well, so tell me this. I mean, in general, over the years, who have been – I guess this is now the Marc Maron question, because this is the way he asked it. Who are your guys? Who are the guys that influenced you, that made you want to be a comic, if there are any?
There were none that made me want to be a comic, but once I got into comedy, I was influenced by – the first ever was this comedian, local headliner in Seattle named Rod Long, who taught me how to do a callback, and I just did everything he did. So if he had a bit about a water slide with this weird cadence, I would do a bit about being on a horseback ride with the same cadence. And then it was Mark Curry for his physical ability, hang with Mr. Cooper guy.
Right.
And then it was and then Chris Rock just knocked my block out. He had a huge impact on me, because I'd never seen anybody talk about their opinions. And I thought, well, I could do that. And so he was very impactful. Damon Wayans, I mean, there's just been tons. I've been on this real Bill Hicks craze lately, again and again and again. I'm always looking. Broadway, has rather really big effect on me. My best friend is named Mike Engling, and he's a Broadway buff. So I figured, because I have such limited vision, when he took me to a Broadway play, these guys can project without barely moving anything. And I'm never going to be a guy that does somersaults or moonwalk or river dance jokes. So I had to learn how to use my voice and my strength of presence to be just as effective. So I've seen so many Broadway plays, and that's what I'm looking for, is that. So there's so many. Oh, that, so many influences.
That, okay, so what you just said at the end there, that kind of speaks to what I got out in the introduction when I was saying that you have this kind of calm demeanor, but you still project. And so I'm thinking that has something to do with it, that you've decided to make that one of your strengths. Is
yes.
And that, you know, we were talking about how what you talk about comes from the heart, but there's nothing wrong with seeing what works well on stage. And if mm-hmm. it's learning to project your persona the way the guys on Broadway do, then it obviously works for you.
Yeah, it's great. Don't get me wrong. I talk about comedy a lot, so be careful. I just ramble on because I just disappear into my head sometimes.
Well, I didn't bring you here to talk about Puccini, but if you if that's where you want to go with this, I'd rather hear you talk about comedy myself. But let me ask you this: what is always funny to you, and then at the same time, what is just never funny to you?
I can laugh about anybody talking about just about anything passionately, but not complain passion, because that's whining. Something horrible happened to you and you can talk about it passionately, great. If you are happy passionately, awesome. You know, people that talk about their kids for the first time, it's fun. I just like people that have a real passion for what they're talking about. Again, I hate complaining. And so passion is very funny to me, always, 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 always. Even, Ron White and his subdued way of doing things. You can tell there's a spark in his eye. He's very passionate telling people about stupidity. And so passion is probably my number one thing. If I can see that you're really, really passionate about what you're talking about, even without all the wild gesticulations and that sort of stuff, I'm into it. What's not funny to me ever is complaining and whining about nothing. Just silly stuff. Silly, silly complaining. Traffic.
Just doesn't make you laugh.
I turn the TV off. I can't watch it.
And what about, as we're talking about, we were talking about comics before, what comics is, and you've been at this a while. I was surprised that we're actually pretty close in age. We're within a couple of years of age. I said to you before we started, I figured you for 10 to 15 years younger, which is lucky man you. But what, are there comics over the years whose career you've wanted to emulate at different points in your career? And who you'd like to be along that kind of path or do certain things that they've done? Not necessarily their type of humor, but the way their career path has gone.
Absolutely. I think anybody with, a foresight can see that Brian Regan has won this race. Because, there's no guarantees that we're all going to end up, creating sitcoms like Larry David or Seinfeld Success or any of that sort of stuff. That's a wild jungle. Nobody knows, has a map to get through that. But Brian Regan, out of sheer skills and word of mouth, and his own intelligence, he won this race. And so I'd love to do that. That's I could do that forever. Forever I could do that.
Daryl, do you think that being a comic today, and it's a very, you're on the road a lot, you work for yourself essentially, probably have a manager and agent, but you're basically a one-man band. Are there different skills required in the digital age of being a comedian than there were, say, 10 or 15 years ago?
I could not tell you because I'm horrible at the digital age, but I've seen the difference. I don't know how to say this. Well, you probably answer this better than me because you've been around as long as I have, and you've obviously evolved to a level of success using this medium. But to me, at the end of the day, nothing has changed. If the really, 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 really great, great, great artists are going to show up some sort of way, And if I just focus on trying to be one of the best artists that I can be and try to maximize my capability, then I'm going to do that. I try to pretend like it was the 1950s and 60s when there was only three channels. You know how good you had to be to get on one of those three channels? Yeah. And the only way you get on there is you had to be a road warrior and that sort of stuff. So I don't know how to get more followers and all that sort of stuff. And so I'm not going to change my perspective much. So I hire people to tell me to do that sort of stuff. But in the meantime, I focus on my act.
I think you need to get the website domain. Might work, but it probably won't. .com.
Okay.
That would be my advice to you, my friend.
Okay, I'll get on it today.
Okay, and on your website, I'd definitely find a way to offer T-shirts that say that.
Okay.
And then have your name on the back.
With
your website.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna do it.
All right. I'm just a suggestion.
I'm gonna do it. Listen, I'm gonna do it.
There's probably people out there who can do that and set it up, but you know.
Yeah. So, I'll get people to do it.
So this bit now, this special you did for Starz, Blind Ambition, which I know it started airing November 10th, and it'll probably be in repeats forever now because that's just the way the channels do it. How did this come about at this point in your career?
So actually, I was Comedy Central and I could not agree on, you know, what I fit in their demographic. And I had done a few of those shows for them, Laughpalooza and Live at Gotham and whatnot. But they didn't think that I fit their demographic, the Comedy Central Presents thing. And then in Canada, where I lived for 11 years, a Canadian network said, we'd like for you to do our version of Con Presents. Then they realized I wasn't a Canadian citizen and said no. So I've been hearing these great stories of people who have just been producing themselves. So I said, I think I'm going to try that. So I did some Hocus Pocus and put together the money from Mike Engling, my friends, and Dance List from Stand Up Records. And we went all in. And I thought Vancouver is the city I started rebirthing myself as a comedian. And I had the biggest following. And we just did it. And then 2 years later, you know, my great manager, Ed Nash. Oh, I have to mention Tracy Rideout was the director. She's fantastic. But she told me, if you can do this, you know, there's no way it won't get sold. So I owe her a lot. And we got this deal. And it's validating to the nth degree. To the nth degree, it is validating. I feel like, I don't know if you're a boxing fan or not, but I feel like when Ernie Terrell kept calling Muhammad Ali Cassius Clay, that's how I feel like the industry.
Wow.
You were going to say my name, and that's how I feel. I don't want to sound, you know, vindictive or like a Nation of Islam new guy, but I just thought that I had something. And if it's going to take me to do it myself with the help of some real allies, then I'm just going to do it. And so it all came together. And if you allow me to you know, espouse on one of the more positive feelings, has been the reviews of the CD, man. Because everything that I thought I was doing, you know, you want people to hope that they get it and see it. But at the same time, the people that you want to hope and see it also saw something in people that are not very good. and so you don't always trust, you know, the people who say what's good and what's not, you know, concept or vision or reasons. But the reviews have been so what I felt like I was doing on stage that it's been, you know, it's been so, I'm so proud, man. It's so exciting to see that. I'm rambling, but listen, okay, so just ride out me. So, did you see the movie Shine with Jeffrey Rush playing David Heathcote?
I did not. I'll be honest, okay. I did not.
There's a scene in there where David Heathcote is trying to master this Rachmaninoff 5-piece, and it's in the biggest moment of his life. He's in the finals of this competition that he could win a scholarship to the U.S. from Australia. And so he's, and nobody said, everybody said, if you try to do this, it could hurt you. You're not ready. And so Ridley Scott directed. And so in the scene, Jeffrey Rush is banging on the piano keys, And then his brain snaps. And so in order to show that, Ridley Scott cuts the volume off, the audience cheering and the music, and all you hear is broken piano strings in slow motion, Beja Sweat's coming, and the guy snaps and then wakes up and he's in an insane asylum. But in that one moment of the performance, he hit it, and he'd never remember that performance again. And I saw that, and I always thought, if I could just go all in like that on one thing, and people get it. And I think that's what happened.
But did anybody in the movie say to Hefgott, you know, it might work, but it probably won't? I'm sorry. I gotta stop.
That's okay.
As soon as you told me that, it's all I could think of. It's like
Listen.
Everything I hear out of your mouth.
Hammer away at it.
You know, sorry.
Hammer away at it, Mr.
Sorry.
Give it to me.
So, did you get to do anything special for the premiere of the Starz show, the special?
No. I was the hurricane hit. And so I was stuck in Seattle. And then I was out on the road in Minneapolis, but no, I didn't get to do anything special. But I'm done with it now. I did it. I had my Hefgott moment, and now it's out for people to enjoy it however they want to enjoy it.
Well, and so I want to clarify. So do you have product from that? Is there a DVD of that?
The DVD, we haven't done a DVD deal yet. We're working on one. CDs you can download, iTunes, Amazon, all those places. And those CDs are going to be produced in hard copy, I think within a month or so,
okay,
at Stand Up Records.
We'll make sure, folks, if you're watching this, whenever you're watching this, if you're watching the video, down below the video there will be a link so you can order the CD, and then when the DVD becomes available, we'll add the link to the DVD, so we'll cover you there.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to get you the first T-shirt. The first that might work, probably won't T-shirt.
That would be awesome. Yeah. Have you noticed any change in people's recognition of you from, you know? I mean, it's been a couple of weeks now. I know it might be a little soon, but
not personally. Nobody's on the street and go, "Hey, you're the guy." That hasn't happened. But different levels of online people have came in and chimed in very nice things, which is cool. But nothing on the streets yet.
You know what? I know what you're waiting for to happen is when Forrest Whitaker is walking down the street and says, "Hey, aren't you that Daryl Lennox guy?"
Yes. Yep.
That'll be the moment, right?
That'll be the moment.
You get the call. Yeah. Mr. Lennox, I represent Forrest Whitaker, and we'd like you to stop looking like him. Thank you very much. So, I got to mention, since we talked about it before we went on the air, we were talking about being on the road, and I had noticed on YouTube that you have a clip from Coconuts, so which is started here out of St. Pete by our mutual friend Bob Shoemaker.
Bob Shoemaker.
Anything you'd like to say about Bob or Coconuts?
Easily the nicest man with the worst gigs on God's green earth. However, they make you fantastic, and it's such a great community. And when I've been in Canada for so long, and I met Bob, and I just stayed on the beach, you know. So I started working some of these rough gigs, and I go and see him all the time. Whenever something big is happening for me, I always go to Florida. Bob's the first person I want to share any success I have with.
That's really nice.
Yeah. Coconuts and Bob Shoemaker and Ricky Tees, and I love it, man. Yeah.
St. Pete Beach, folks.
St. Pete Beach, yeah.
Come by and see our friend Bob. I've known him since the 80s. I just think the world of him, so I was really glad to hear we had him in common. So last question, what's next? What do you know, you're traveling, you're on the road, you're in Milwaukee today. Do you have a lot of gigs lined up into the new year?
After I leave Milwaukee, I'll do the best comedy club in Canada is Winnipeg's, Rumors. And I'm actually going to do my second CD with stand-up. It's called Canadian Content. So 11 years of doing stand-up in Canada, and they don't have Starz there. And so they'll eventually at some point hopefully buy Blind Ambition. So I'm going to give all Canadian Content CD to them just to thank them and support, you know, for my career and stuff. And then in Ottawa at Yuck Yucks. And then I start the new year. I'll be down your way. At McCurdy's and on Coconuts, first 2 weeks of March. So I'll have that T-shirt for you by then.
That would be great. I will come out and see you in person. I'd love to shake your hand and see the show live. That would be great.
Oh, That'll be great.
All right. Well, folks, listen, you can catch Daryl Lennox's first comedy special, Blind Ambition, on the Starz channel. Obviously, check your local listings for when it's to air. And you can look for him in comedy clubs near you, as we talked about. Go to his website. It's daryllenox.com, D-A-R-R-Y-L, and then Lennox, L-E-N-O-X.com. I think I saw that you're also on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah.
And got a YouTube channel, so folks can go and check out the work there. Oh, correct.
So.
All right. Well, I'll look forward to the T-shirt and seeing you in person in a couple months. And, Daryl, thanks so much for joining us, Mr. Media, today.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest two-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Marc Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, The TechCrunch Headlines, and The Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening.